You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Captain Dean, your host with the most. And I am at Mellow Matt's Music and More, 1200 Small House Road, which is close to Scottsville Road, which is what I almost said. And Matt is here because that makes me nervous. And yeah, what did you say? Look it up on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And they've got all the Whitney Houston and Sade albums you could ever want in your life.
Until we get done here.
The Best of Whitney.
Yeah.
Did you actually order that for somebody? Good.
Yeah.
For you?
No, not
me.
I'm more of a
Paula. Some of that Sade may disappear before I leave. So.
Oh, well, if you want it, then. That is the voice of my guest, whose name is Cash Wilson.
How's it going, man?
Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Glad for you to be here, because we talked a while back, and you were like, I don't know if I should do one of these. I was like, why not? You're Cash Wilson. You're a singer-songwriter. You're a local musician. You're a local music fan.
Very true.
Of course you need to do one of these. Now, Cash, this morning I woke up, and I didn't know that much about you. I know you. We've known each other for a while.
Yeah.
I've got one of your albums. It's really good.
I do try to cultivate an air of mystery, though.
But this morning I woke up. I didn't know much about you, knowing I was going to do this interview. Mm-hmm. And about 2 o'clock this afternoon, I was like, hey, he did an episode of the Colonel Cast with Ian Harper. I think I'll listen to that. So about 3 hours ago, I learned all kinds of stuff about you. So now I've got everything I need to move forward with this interview.
Well, that's really what we hope to do is, you know, get the momentum started, and then we'll just retread everything we talked about then.
That's right.
The easiest podcast you've ever done.
Exactly. I am looking at the levels on the microphones, making sure they are set. Check 1, 2. Okay.
Doing all right on this side?
It looks like you're doing pretty good.
Okay.
I'm going to turn it down a little bit, and then you're good to go. So, Cash Wilson. Singer,
yes,
songwriter, guitarist,
at times.
lyricist. You have released, I know, one album or EP in particular because I own it, and it's a really good record, and it was called
The Regret.
The Regret. And you were telling me before we started rolling tape, that was meant to be a trilogy, but that's actually part 3.
Yep.
So you're like George Lucas. You start with part 3 and then you go back. And go back to episode 1, correct?
I think I'm more like George Lucas in that I released the trilogy initially and was not happy with how it was, so I had to go back and change some things and make other things disappear.
Well, there you go.
It's all computer-generated if you listen to what's out there now.
Well, there, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's really good, and that was kind of my introduction to you. It's like I knew who you were. And one day you came in here and we talked at some point, and I don't know, we've just kind of talked off and on, but we've never really, I've never seen you live for some reason.
Yeah.
Do you not perform live very much?
Not recently.
Have been known to.
Yeah, mostly back in high school, and then I went and lived down in Nashville for a few years.
Yes, you attended Belmont.
I did.
See?
There you go.
I know.
This guy's done his homework.
Three hours ago. Thanks, Ian.
But
Ian Harper gave me all of my cheat sheets and cliff notes that I needed for today's episode.
But since I got back, it's a lot easier for me to move around just with me and an acoustic guitar. So I play a lot of open mic nights and writer's nights and that kind of stuff.
Which is cool. I can't do that.
Oh, really?
I have never been the type of person to just pick up a guitar and entertain people with guitar and vocal. Like, I am absolutely paranoid. Petrified of the idea of doing that.
So you've never tried doing it then?
Well, I mean, I could try at home, you know, but I would never walk on stage at open mic at Tidballs and be like, I got these 3 songs I'm going to play for you. And I'm not that person. I have to have a band.
I would definitely say if you do get the impulse to try, home is probably the first place to try that.
Home
out.
Is the best place.
Yeah, but I mean, with your prowess on the skins and playing bass and singing and all that, I don't think it'd be that big a leap if you should ever try to do that.
Well, I mean, it's crossed my mind. I don't own an acoustic guitar. I'm not a big.
That
I'm
is
not
an
keen
issue though,
on that
yeah.
world. I guess.
Yeah.
But anywho, but I need to go back to the future on you and start with the excellent question.
All right.
Of all Sound Atlas episodes, after the babbling is over, Cash, where are you from?
I am from right here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Ah, actually grew up just a couple streets over from where we are right now.
Oh, like over in Covington?
Yeah, right off Hampton. So right there on Hampton. So
very nice. That's a nice street.
Yeah. It's a nice little area. Got to spend lots of time at Covington Park and you know, here in the area.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember when this was a junior food store?
I do, actually.
It's old school.
Much improved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to come in here to buy beer at midnight, and now I'm buying records. Whitney Houston's greatest hit. This would have been part of it, would it not? No? What was in this building? Ah, I never bought running shoes in Athletic Attic.
I
should have covered all this crap in your part two episode. I'm going to Mellow Matt part three is coming up soon. We're going to get the details of what this store used to be.
Dad's Toys and an Athletic Attic.
I remember Dad's Toys, though. I do remember that.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
Well, next door, I bought Bud Light and hung out with all my stupid friends. And they're still stupid. But that's cool. I don't meet a lot of local Bowling Green people. I meet a lot of people that are from the area and then moved here, or people that are transplants to here.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But you and I share that in common. We are local, born and raised right
here.
There
you go, man. I know I liked you.
When did you get into music, and like what age, and what started you down the path of doing all this?
If I remember right, I think I was like 6 years old, and for a birthday, I got like a little, nothing special, but like a little like kids guitar, like my first whatever. My grandparents got that for me, and it proceeded to kind of collect dust in the corner for you know, years and years. And then when I was 13, I don't even remember what the song was that made me have this impulse, but I do remember very clearly sitting in my room listening to my stereo. So I was already kind of into music more as a fan. But man, I'd really like to learn how to play that. That sounds really cool. And then I was like, oh, wait a second, I've got a guitar sitting right over there. So literally, I just got to do it. It's the only thing.
It's that simple.
Yep.
What was the song?
Honestly, I don't remember.
Okay.
Probably, I've always been into like folky singer-songwriter kind of stuff, which is kind of obvious, I guess, from what I do.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know.
If I had to guess, I would say it was probably either like some Southern rock, like Lynyrd Skynyrd, maybe.
Okay.
Or like a James Taylor kind of folky kind of thing.
That makes sense.
You know?
Was that kind of music pretty like well known around the house or in your life? Like what did you hear? What did your parents or friends listen to that, you know? Because obviously, like you're saying, I think a lot of people get a guitar or a drum set when they're really little.
Yeah, for sure.
And then when you hit your teenage years, it's like almost a reawakening thing. It's like, oh, yeah. Now I'm really interested, you know?
If I remember right, I think it was like right around my 13th birthday whenever I first like picked it up and decided, like, okay, it's something I want to do. So it was almost exactly the story you just described.
Right.
Neither one of my parents, like, I mean, they listen to music, they'll have the radio on or whatever, but neither one of them is really that into it. Like you know, there's like people that kind of passively, like they'll have the radio on or they're kind of passive music fans and they have, you know, the records that everybody has.
Right.
And, you know, not aside from my parents at all, but they're just, it's not something that they've ever
been. They weren't local music
into.
Active or going out to shows. They just, music was a form of entertainment.
Yeah, but it was always there on the periphery.
Yeah.
But like, because, so like, you think about, like, I was just talking about the folky singer-songwriter stuff, and that Lynyrd Skynyrd, Southern Rock kind of stuff is kind of where I started.
Right.
And that's because growing up, I heard a lot of 90s country that was on that radio that was just kind of on in the background, and it's kind
that
of
would have been
a
the
blend
beaver.
Of those two. Yeah, absolutely.
Big old slap of the beaver tail on
go,
that one.
There you go. Absolutely.
I don't talk about the beaver very much. Well, everything references change, around, like, D98 and a lot of the older guys talk about D98. The newer guys talk about D93.
Yeah.
Do you recall the short-lived The Buzzard?
I don't recall The Buzzard.
The Buzzard existed when D98 became The Duck, and went country.
Did you listen to the two years of the duck being country? I vaguely remember the duck. Yeah,
give or take a duck or two is what the commercial likes to say, which is great. but yeah, I would see. Obviously, I can relate to that because I knew a ton of people. A lot of them were country music people. So it seemed like half of the town or half the people I knew, half the stores I would go in, half the restaurants I would eat at, they all had the Beaver on.
Yep.
Because GGC is always number two. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Goober people, but the Beaver wins.
I don't know if I want to weigh in on a turf war or anything.
No, but, no
but
turf war.
Definitely growing up, yeah.
Just saying.
It's definitely the Beaver
in
our house.
The facts.
Now, as I got older and once I kind of, you know, started playing music and got into my own, then it was like D93, like almost all the time, almost exclusively.
But as obviously an aspiring singer-songwriter, you were kind of walking the line in both worlds.
Yeah. Well,
classic rock, country, modern country, classic country.
So. And then there's kind of a third stream if I'm trying to like kind of trace like the history or the DNA of my music or whatever as I think
Please
of it.
Please do. Get and scientific that, about it.
Let me put my lab coat on and scrub in. Well, like, so my parents, they split up when I was like 6, 7 years old and my dad moved down to Atlanta.
Oh.
So he actually opened up a dry cleaners down there. And so whenever I would go during the summers or on school breaks or whatever to visit, we spent a lot of time just hanging out there because, you know, he's an entrepreneur. You got to be there to make sure the ship's running and all that kind of stuff for a lot of stuff. But the people that worked with him would always have their radio on, you know, while they were working. They would always have it playing whatever, like, the R&B of the day was.
Right.
And so because
of
that.
Atlanta has become known for is their Hotlanta of hip-hop artists and R&B artists. Like, it became the hip-hop and R&B Nashville-type city.
Yeah.
Like, everybody went to Atlanta for that.
And I think
recording
it's interesting.
Recording studios and stuff.
Because I'm also, like, a hip-hop fan. Like, now, like, that's, you know, especially, like, later in high school and all that. That's a lot of what I listen to.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting that Atlanta has become that city because now, if you, like, were to turn on, like, 101 The Beat Jams out of Nashville right now and, like, listen to, like, a lot of the rap stuff.
Right.
You can tell that it's got that melodic R&B influence in a lot of it. And even if it is, you know, facilitated a lot of it by, like, auto-tune and using some of the effects and stuff like that.
Just,
like the way
they invented that stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like those Atlanta recording studios were kind of merging New York and L.A. stuff and Detroit. Like, it all kind of was like a melting pot, it seemed like, in Atlanta.
For sure, for sure.
Based on what little I know about R&B and hip hop. Just that's my interpretation of what kind of happened there.
Yeah.
Because it was becoming a really well known city for recording artists to go to.
Well, and when I first started playing out and like got, you know, a couple years after I picked up the guitar and got good enough that, like, I was part of why I started writing songs is because I wasn't good enough to play a lot of the songs that I liked and wanted to learn how to play. So I learned like a close approximation and then kind of turn that into its own thing.
Right.
And then it got to the point where like I started just having ideas of my own that I would try and get under my fingers. But whenever I first started playing out in public, the first place I ever actually played was at Eddie's Attic at their open mic night, which I don't know if you know anything about that. It's there in Decatur, Georgia, which is within Metro Atlanta.
I mean, I'm not familiar with any clubs down there. I've been to Atlanta a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know much about the history of their music scene. I just know what I've read.
Well, they're in Decatur. They've actually got a historically a pretty strong singer-songwriter scene, too. It's like where John Mayer, one of his big breaks was playing there at Eddie's Attic. And because every Monday night they have an open mic night, but it's like a shootout contest. And so at the end of the night, there's three finalists and then somebody wins. And then at the end of, like, I think it's each quarter, maybe it's every, you know, biannually or something like that, they'll have like a shootout of the winners of the other shootout.
I wouldn't be in Atlanta and call anything a shootout.
That's what they call it. I didn't coin that one.
I don't like that. That makes me uncomfortable.
But anyway, so yeah, so they've got the singer songwriter scene down there, mm-hmm. And I've played at Eddie's Attic a couple times, which is also cool because they record as you play, and for $10 you get your CD right at the end of the night. They'll
straight from the soundboard. Yeah, good quality stuff.
So well, some of it is not due to their mixing, of course, but like as I've played, progressively, some of the stuff I actually like to listen to now from when I've played there.
That's cool.
But yeah, and I've also, there was a while there, right after I graduated high school, where I was down there for the summer working for my dad just because I didn't have anything else to do. Mm-hmm. And he and I were out with some of his friends one night, and there was a girl that was playing just over in the corner on this little patio, this bar and grill that we went to. And her guitar player quit on her in the middle of the show. And so somehow it came up that I play guitar. And so we ended up talking, and I ended up spending the rest of that summer working for my dad at the dry cleaner during the day, but then playing acoustic guitar with her.
Interesting scenario to be in.
Yeah, for sure. But she was trying to break into the singer-songwriter scene there, and she had actually been on, I think it was on Sony, but you can check out her band, Jezebel, Jezebehl. It was it was her and another girl had a duo, and some of the songs were kind of produced to be reggaeton, but they were singer-songwriters that then the producers got a hold of them and, did the tracks.
Screwed up.
Yeah, some of it I think is a little much, but there's also some of it that's really solid. So it's bilingual, Spanish, English kind of stuff.
I'm a producer. Here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to take your raw talent and mess it up.
But so that was a really cool experience for me because
I bet. So I mean, yeah, you're saying that you kind of rediscovered the guitar you got as a child about 13.
Mm-hmm.
So between middle school and high school, you really dove headfirst into that world of not only learning the craft of playing guitar, but songwriting,
mm-hmm.
singing, performing. Yep. So you went through all that during your junior and high school years.
Yeah, I guess the narrative flow of this has been kind of all over the place so far, so I'll try to hand that back.
No, dude, that's the point of this podcast.
But
you realize who you're talking to?
when I was in high school, I actually had, everybody does, there's always, a group of guys that start playing different instruments at the same time.
And so yes.
You kind of have your, amorphous, nebulous groups of, okay, these guys are a band this week, and then, the bass player and the guitar player had a disagreement, so now they're not a band anymore, and now there's two competitive bands or whatever. So we did all that nonsense for a while, and then once we got to high school, it kind of solidified into what we call ourselves a Cash Wilson band, just because I wrote the songs and because we couldn't come up with anything else. I had pages and pages and pages of notebook paper. It's literally just line after line of names. And it was drummer didn't like this one. Bass player didn't like that one.
Now that's a band.
Yeah.
When nobody agrees on what to name the band.
Well, obviously I didn't protest too much once we settled on,
Yeah. We can't be Cash and we can't be the band.
Yeah.
So
I think I may have said something about this on Ian's podcast, but if not, this is a Sound Atlas exclusive.
Oh, no, you can bring the Colonel Cast can mingle into the Sound Atlas.
When you see on any of my social media stuff, Cash,
yes.
That's a joke because one night the drummer and bass player had some sort of conflict when we had a show booked. Last minute came up, they couldn't be there. And so I joked with the crowd that you're not getting the Cash Wilson band tonight, you're just getting the Cash Wilson. The Cash Wilson. So that's
sounds like a puppet. But
yeah. Well, sometimes I feel like one.
If only my puppet was here. But yeah, on social media, I think is it your Facebook music page and Instagram is Cash the Cash Wilson?
It's like the
nickname that's in the middle of your actual name.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so it's Instagram is Cash the Cash, and I think it's just Cash Wilson Music.
You sound
and
like
then
a
Cash
hip-hop
Wilson
artist.
on the Twitter. I know. I
Cash
know
for Cash. Isn't that check the check?
Well, I mean, I think if you listen to my music, you can kind of hear that I crank the bass up a little bit higher than it probably needs to go.
I'm telling you, dude. I got that CD from you years ago, and it sat there for a while, and I was like, oh, wait, I forgot this guy dropped the CD off.
Yeah.
I need to check this out. I popped it, and I was like, this is really cool.
Thanks, man.
Because it was, in my opinion, which I'm not a great critic of records, but there is a hodgepodge of sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of different levels.
Yeah,
is the best way I can put it.
Well,
I was really impressed. I grew up a really big fan of Beck.
Yeah,
and Beck was really good about playing a folk guitar with a hip hop beat and some distorted heavy metal solo. Like, he was mm-hmm. good about these merger of worlds of yeah. music. And that's exactly what I got from that first initial listening of your record.
Well,
that means
insulting
or good?
No, that is awesome because one of my favorite artists of all time is Prince.
Okay.
And I feel like that is what I love so much yeah. about him is the way that he just took this from over here right. and that from over there
right.
and just
but like
put
you
it
said,
all together.
And you know, growing up, you did have those three worlds. Classic
yeah.
rock, folk, songwriter mm-hmm. type stuff. And then you've got the country element.
Yeah.
And then you've got the hip-hop,
yep.
R&B kind of element. And to me, that's three things that you captured very well.
Well, thank you. And
a lot of people would hear it and be like, ah, this is interesting.
Yeah.
But I think a musician or a student of music history would easily pick up on that.
Yeah. But well, thank you.
That's how I picked it up.
I appreciate that because that's exactly what I was going for. You well, nailed it. Like,
there you go.
Full bullseye right there.
Maybe I should be a critic for
yeah,
Rolling
there you
Stone.
Go.
I'm going to give this record two stars, but let me tell you about it.
Could just be a critic. These ages go around just... Not even necessarily just music
no,
either.
God, I don't want to. I'd rather be a food critic in this town.
Yeah,
I would
for sure.
shut some shit down real quick.
I thought you were going to go the other way with that, but okay. that's the power of the critic. You can do either one, I guess.
Oh, no. There's some crappy restaurants around here. Bad servers, anyway. The food was great, but the service was terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get back to your music.
I was kind of intrigued to hear where that was going, but okay.
That's my part, too. So, yeah, that's what you did growing up, junior high school,
yep.
and then being down there and getting hooked up with this. You said it was an artist or a duo? It was kind of both?
There was a duo initially, and then they went their separate ways. And then one half of the duo, Katie, who goes
okay.
by...
You teamed up with her
yeah.
and played guitar.
Yeah.
And... Did you, like, songwrite together? Did you collaborate? Or
I was already pretty heavy into the okay. songwriting, all throughout high school. Like,
so
I was,
what was it just her as a name, or did you all, like, build something?
We talked and joked about a couple different names, but primarily it was just for her, and I was just doing the accompaniment, which was awesome, because especially when it was just the two of us,
mm-hmm.
Like, there's a couple times we had people set in and do whatever.
Right.
But, like, especially when it's the two of us, I learned a ton about how to play guitar to accompany a vocal.
Right.
Like because there's things that you can do that really bring out, you know, little subtle things that can really, like, take it to that next level.
Right.
Just rhythmically or learning when not to play
right.
Is a huge deal. And that summer was like a master class in that because she had been at that other level, like, you know, mm-hmm. as far as, like, just the people
well,
she's working with and stuff.
It's
and
a delicate
down.
World, really, because vocal and a single instrument like a guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a delicate thing to, you know, balance.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And you really could learn a lot from something like that.
Yeah, I absolutely did. That was yeah. one of, as far as, like, growth as a musician, like, apart from, like, when you know, like, really get heavy into learning your instrument at that first time.
Right.
And, you know, especially when I was a kid. Like, my dad, he had a guitar kind of sitting around, and he played a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, I picked it up and ran with it. And he always said, like, we would joke about, like, how much I learned or whatever. And he'd be like, oh, yeah, if I had 8 hours a day to sit around and practice, I'd be pretty good, too.
Thanks,
Which,
Dad.
Yeah, exactly. But he was right to a certain extent. And you would think that I would probably be better than I am with the time that I've invested in it. But,
well, you know.
You know. Different things, I guess, for different focus on different aspects of it, I guess, and you learn different stuff.
So, were you living in Atlanta or the
that,
Atlanta
that summer
metro
I went down
at
to,
this point?
That down there, that summer, I just went to just kind of hang out, and
okay.
like I said, I didn't have anything else to do, and so he offered me to let me come work for him, and I was like, okay, sure.
Why, okay.
Might as well go sweat and clean people's clothes and fold it and all that.
Well, it's dry cleaning.
Yeah.
There's
well,
no water
we keep it all, you know, keep it all protected. It's got the plastic bags and stuff.
Yeah.
You keep on everything.
I remember the first time I saw a lint roller.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Is that dry cleaning?" Technically, it is.
Now, this may rock a couple
when
people's
they invented
world.
The lint roller, they should have called it dry cleaning.
This is, you know, Ian brilliant. And I got into some conspiracy theory stuff, you know, but this is going
to
be the one that really blows people's mind.
Dude, if you want to turn
when
this
you,
into
when
a
you
Joe Rogan experience, I'm all for it.
When you dry clean your clothes, when they get them dry cleaned, they actually come out of the machine wet.
Yes.
It's a name
they're
for the method of the chemicals that they're using to clean
steamed,
it.
They're
so.
Steamed, right? There's some steam involved.
I know there is some steam involved. To be honest, I never stuck my head in to see exactly how everything was happening.
Why not? You gotta learn about it.
Well, I do know very well that the clothes come out of the machine wet, and then you know you process them from there. So it is. I don't
Boom.
Know how did we get here?
Knowledge, science. But you are out of high school by this point.
Yes.
And doing that.
Yep.
So how long did that last, and what did you do during the time and after the time with this particular run?
Mostly it was just that summer, and then like whenever I would go back, like for I said I was out of school, but now that I think about it, it may have actually been like the summer between my junior and senior year, because I did come back up here. And then would go back, fall breaks or whatever.
They all kind of blend together.
So, yeah, so I didn't, you know, I'm not under oath on this, right?
One crazy summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do it again.
I would come back from that and then had my high school band, and we would play places around here. Like Mugshots was kind of like our home base.
Wow.
Over there for a long time.
Okay, and so you were in a band here in Bowling Green.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Who was in it? What did you do?
Okay, it was me on vocals and rhythm guitar.
Okay.
And then Rick Cordy, who's one of my good friends from school, who should be like on the cover of every Guitar World issue they come out with. Dude is unbelievable. Unbelievable to this day. But he was playing lead guitar for us. And then my friend Thomas Dooley played bass for us.
Okay.
He's kind of famous around here for his walkathons that just keep getting canceled every time we have a polar report.
That's fine.
Yeah, actually, the origin of that, for anybody that knows about the Thomas Dooley Memorial Walkathon, is one day we had a bunch of snow and ice, and he called me. He was at home. I guess he just decided he didn't need to go to school that day, but he called me through the school's switchboard operator up in our Spanish class, where everybody else was sitting there watching, you know, the polar report come by and see how we're the only school open, you know, in miles. And we're sitting there watching that. He says, "Hey, make sure that they turn on the TV." And I'm like, "Well, we are going." He said, "Well, watch the polar report when it gets to the events that are canceled." And he called in that his memorial walkathon to himself had been canceled.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's been a kind of a running joke.
No idea what you're talking about. But
yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So there's a very slim. I don't know why I expected you to know what I was talking about, but there's a very narrow band of people that graduated from Bowling Green High School like 2007 to like 2010 that will know what I'm talking about.
That was one of my questions, is where did you go to high school?
Well, there you go.
You're a purple.
Yeah, I am.
You're a purple ghost.
Just won't wash off.
Well, that's cool. Was that your first band?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, okay. we had kind of...
I caught some of this with your interview with Ian Harper, but...
Yeah, he and I didn't really go in depth
you didn't
on
go
this
in depth
earlier
into
stuff.
It, but the... you were in coming of age and learning the songwriting craft, mm-hmm. the singer-songwriter performing, but that was your first band?
Yeah, we had kind of, before I get in trouble for not mentioning them, we also had Dion Barrick playing keyboard with
everybody.
Us, and then Daniel McKillop played drums with us.
Okay.
And so that was the kind of rounded out the band.
And what was the band's name?
Well, the Cash Wilson Band, because we could never agree on anything.
That was the Cash Wilson Band. Okay.
So we would play mostly there at Mugshots, sometimes over at Greener Grounds and all the different name changes it's been through. Where it's
Bread
White
and
Squirrel.
Bagel.
Yeah, Bread
now
and Bagel.
White Squirrel.
We played Bread and Bagel a couple times, and at Greener Grounds, and then White Squirrel. I've played there a couple times. Mm-hmm. Then was
it called Greener Grounds when I had lunch there? I think it might have been. They had a spaghetti dish
mm-hmm.
that was made with like this certain, I don't know, wheat pasta or something. It was phenomenal.
Okay, see, because we were just talking about the food critic thing, I didn't know where we were going with that. Had me on the edge of my seat.
I loved Bread and Bagel. Mm-hmm. I went there constantly for the Banjo Bill open mic nights.
Oh, and, yeah.
I loved what they had to serve because I'm a nut for, you know, sweet tooth kind of stuff. They had
their
a
Presto Pesto sandwich they used to have was one of my favorites for sure.
So I really missed Bread and Bagel. But White Squirrel's been there for a while. Prior to White Squirrel Brewery opening, it was that restaurant.
Yeah.
And I can never remember the name of that. But they had great food.
Yeah.
I was really kind of shocked that it didn't survive.
Yeah.
But I only played one show there when it was the restaurant.
Oh, really?
I played drums for Rachel Pearl one night.
Oh, cool.
And it was like that was the one time. And they saw me walking in the door with drums, and they were like, oh, God.
Yeah.
No. No. And the like before I even set the gear down on the stage, the woman was like, can you make sure you play right? And I'm like, lady, you won't even know I'm here.
Yeah.
And she... They didn't really apologize. She just told me after the end of the night, she was like, I've never seen a drummer play so quiet in my life. And I was like, I've got brushes. Yeah. And I'm polite and I'm smart. And I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was fun to, it was cool. They've always had music there.
Yep. Yeah, no matter who's in charge, seems like.
Have you played there since it's been White Squirrel? Have you performed there?
I've played there, I think, twice since it's been White Squirrel.
That's awesome.
Both times it was somebody else had booked it and was like, hey, do you want to come play? And I was like, well, sure.
Those are the best gigs.
Yeah. Just had to show up.
Get a call on Tuesday to play on Saturday. Yep. Yeah, I'll be there.
Yep.
Thanks.
That's really that you're asking why I don't play out much. That's really I'm just waiting for people to come to me.
Just follow you. Yeah. When's your next gig? I don't know.
Nobody's called me yet. Yeah.
So how long did this band? Well, between the two, right? You're in the band while you're here during school. You go to Atlanta for the summer and you do this other project. How long did all of this go on for?
The band here, we were together for a few years. I think 2007 was when we played our first show together, if I remember right, over there at Mugshots. And it was one of those where, because I've been playing like as a singer-songwriter, you know, different places, we did half of the show as the band, and then half of it was just me with an acoustic guitar.
Why not?
I actually had that on video, which is pretty awesome.
To do that, though.
Yeah. So we did that, and then I think 2009 was when we I think we came back and played a couple shows after, like, you know, summers at college. Like, we would all come back here because we didn't have anything else going on.
So after high school and after these bands kind of withered, I guess.
Yeah, and the acoustic deal, it wasn't that long. It was just, like, I learned a lot, but it was, by and large, just that one summer.
Okay.
And then we would kind of, like, if I was back in town or whatever, we'd go do something.
Okay.
But
well, what did you do after all that?
After all that is when...
Which was a whopping 10 years ago as we're speaking.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
It is.
It really is weird to think about that.
I'm a lot older than you, so there's a lot of weird things going on right now. It's like, wait a minute. Are you telling me that 2020 means that 1990 was 30 years ago?
I know, right?
Yeah, that's hard to believe.
Yep.
I just literally had this conversation with somebody the other day, which will probably be like the episode next year is on the Sound Atlas.
Yeah.
People are going, all right, Dean's turned into a broken record now. He's just talking about the same shit every time. So 10 years ago, what did you do after high school? Did you go to Western?
No, I went to Belmont.
Belmont, that's right. Yeah. See? I knew that.
Yeah, and I felt like that was a trick question, but
yeah, I guess it was.
Being a proud Bowling Green Purple that I am, I did take some like dual credit courses. Or whatever,
there you go.
But I
learned about this earlier today, and I'd already forgotten about it. You attended Belmont University.
Yep, I did.
For the sake of music.
I did. I went to their Mike Curb Business School in their songwriting program.
Mike Curb of the famous Curb Records.
Yes.
They had a beautiful brick wall sign down on the 17th.
He's got his name on all kinds of stuff.
Yes, he does.
that was a really cool experience for me. I learned a lot about the songwriting craft, but I almost feel like it's a disservice that they called, at least when I went through the program, that they were calling it songwriting. Because, I mean, there's a lot of that you can teach, structure and things like that. But by and large, I felt like the vast majority of the really valuable stuff we got to was the business side of how publishing works.
Which is something nobody really knows.
Yeah. I was lucky enough that my last semester there, I got to intern at Sony ATV in their sync licensing department. So, like, I was like, I hope I'm not going to get in trouble for saying any of this, but it's been long enough. I'm sure that nobody I know even works there anymore.
How long ago was this?
Almost. It was back in, like, 2012, I guess.
I guess that means it's
back when
safe.
We thought the world was going to end anyway.
So yeah. Didn't the world end in 2012? This is all a dream?
I've seen the theory that that's why things are so weird now, is that because the world actually did end and we just didn't realize it.
Yeah, the Mayan calendar ended and the world went to hell. But we're still alive.
Yeah, somehow. But, I forgot what the question was. I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know. You were talking about learning the business of... Oh, you were at Sony.
Yeah, yeah.
So you did an internship?
Yeah, so I got to learn like the inside out, and I got to spend the vast majority of the day like on the phone with people who obviously don't understand the intricacies of how music publishing works.
And did you reject every demo that came your way?
I didn't get that power to reject or accept anything, but I got to explain to people why when they submitted their request, it probably wasn't going to get accepted unless they were going to cut a pretty good check to, you know, I'm sorry, but Paul McCartney and the Lennon Estate need to get paid to do whatever. I don't necessarily know if they need to get paid as much as they do, but, you know, not knocking, you know, the Beatles, obviously.
Of course
But just, after seeing some of those numbers, it's like, oh, wow, okay, so that's how much you get for that.
Mm. That's fascinating. So how long did you do that? Just for a semester?
Yeah, I was an intern for a semester, and then I actually accidentally graduated early from Belmont.
Oops.
Yeah, because I minored in Spanish, and which helped when I was because I started studying it like in high school, like everybody else does or whatever.
I failed Spanish.
But then
that's why I'm an El Astronauta now. I failed Spanish class.
Which, by the way, is one of my favorite t-shirts to wear, and I get questions about it all the time. I got one of the nice limited edition.
You got
ones.
The limited edition navy shirt.
Yep.
Yeah. Good job. One of my Thank you for that, by the way. You were one of the first people to purchase one of our t-shirts.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, even if I didn't know you and like you and like be excited about the music,
like,
I'm
that's
like,
cool.
That's a sick design.
Because you understand what it is. See, there's a lot of stuff you and I have in common. You understand.
Dry cleaning is wet at some point in the process.
No, but you know.
El Astronauta means the astronaut.
I know you know what it means, but you know what it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for
Because
sure,
you,
for sure.
like me, are big nerd on conspiracy theories and ancient astronaut theories, and you know exactly what
as
that
thing
is.
As soon as I saw
is.
It, I was like, I need that shirt, like, immediately. And so that's cool to know I was one of the first people to get one.
Yeah,
I'm
you were. You
I,
really were.
I was almost worried that I'd be too late. Like, whenever I message you, like,
oh,
well,
no.
It's
you
been
know,
up for 20 minutes.
Promotion.
Truly, it's
that's the gift of promotion. Out. You make it look awesome. You're like, man, I've been plugging this shit for 5 days. Don't waste my t-shirt yet. But thank you for that.
I'm happy to do it, man.
I have one of your CDs. You have my t-shirt. Yeah. It's a mutual trade-off.
Well, I can't wait to also have a CD. I've seen all the clips of
We're
the
working.
Recordings in process.
It's in process. I'm taping this right as we speak. We will have an EP coming your way.
I can't wait.
I don't know when, but it's coming.
Awesome.
I guess 2020. Yeah. 2020 is looking good for the Spanish astronaut band.
That'll be when I throw... I've got a project I've been working on that actually when Ian and I did our conversation was like months ago, and I thought
I'd already
be done with the project that I'm working on, and I'm not.
So follow-up to the episode of the Colonel Cast.
Yeah, so I'm
still working on it.
But it's a lot closer. Like, I've just got to finish some vocals and then stop being a perfectionist and just let it go.
Yeah.
And it'll be good to
go.
Hey,
you know what? I'm in that boat right now.
Yeah. I stood at the
microphone this past weekend and I just stared at it. I'm like, I can't. I'm not physically and mentally ready for this right now. I'm not in the mood.
The worst is whenever I do like 5 or 6 takes of something and then like something was wrong. Like, I had the level set from when I was recording guitar, so it's too low or something like that, and I got to go back and redo it.
Somebody was like, you just need to pick up a bottle of wine on your way home and have a few glasses and then cut the vocals. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
That was one of the cool things about being at Belmont is learning some of the professors they have are it's actually people that are actually working in the industry addition to teaching.
Yeah.
And I'll shout out to Drew Ramsey and Shannon, Drew and Shannon. They produce like some Robert Randolph stuff, NDRE, Johnny Lang,
right,
all that kind of stuff. But Drew was really, really good to me and kind of took me under his wing and showed me a lot of stuff.
Right.
And he would tell me that like NDRE, for example, and hopefully, I'm not betraying his trust by revealing this, but I thought it was really cool. Apparently, whenever it's time for her to cut her vocal, everybody leaves. Not even just leaves the room. Like, they have to leave the building. They'll light some candles for her and kind of turn the lights down. Dude, and then they'll just leave her with her stuff and let her do what she needs to do.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I kind of have stupid little things of that nature in my house when I'm doing recording stuff.
Do you have any tricks to try and get a better vocal performance out of yourself that you don't mind talking about?
I play guitar.
I do the same.
Unplugged.
Yep.
Just hold it. Pretend like you're on stage. To me, it's about trying to capture the live feel.
Yep.
But in a studio, but without it being a live recording.
Yep.
So I learned when I stepped into the role from being a drummer full time to being a songwriter and lead singer, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Because I would stand there. I didn't know what to do with my arms. I just put them down by my side and flap them around like a penguin.
Yeah.
And stare at the lyrics in front of me.
Yeah.
And I felt ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I won't play. I'll just hold it.
Yeah.
Or I'll pretend like I'm.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll even do that. Paper towel or something to kind of weave between the strings so I can actually strum it a little bit.
No, I discovered that you could do that without, it wouldn't pick it up.
Yeah.
Not on the crappy home equipment,
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
Yeah. I do something very similar.
Yeah.
Because I even though I know there's nobody watching and nobody ever going to see it, anytime I try and do stuff with my hands, it's just like
it's a feel thing. It's a mentality thing. It's the essence of I can do this on stage. I like this song. This is how I do it on stage.
Yeah.
And then you get in there and you're not playing guitar. You're standing in front of a microphone. And all of a sudden you're changing your voice and you're wanting to do all this stuff. And it's like, man. Just capture it.
Yeah, and that's exactly why the last thing I put out on Spotify is the Bear EP, which it has an animal, the bear, on there, but it's an acoustic EP, so there's a bad dad joke, and the play on words there with the title.
I am a dad, and I don't get that joke.
Oh, okay, well, it's stripped down, it's acoustic, it's more bear, and, exposed.
Oh, bear bones, or yeah, bear, naked.
There you go, okay. B-A-R-E, yeah, but naked. also with the animal, because why not? but anyway, that was literally my friend Ricky that I was talking about earlier. Okay. If you listen, that's him playing lead guitar all over that.
Great.
And literally, he came over to my house. I was even planning on him texting me before he came over so I could get a shower and drink some hot tea and make sure everything was all opened up and the hot and steamy and all that. And that did not happen. He's just
dry cleaning.
Exactly. It's a common thread in my life that just keeps coming back. But so I was waiting for a text from him, just sitting there watching TV, and then I hear a knock on the door.
Oh,
and he's
yeah.
there, and so I was like, "Well, let's go ahead and do it." So we just literally set up, and there's some videos on YouTube. We're literally in we're in the crappy apartment my wife and I were living in at the time, sitting there in the living room in our two chairs from our dining room, mics and everything set up. We just put some cameras around in different places and just recorded 2 hours.
Wow,
it was done.
That's
cool. Which is awesome. And then now that I'm trying to do some studio stuff and I'm doing the Prince or Stevie Wonder thing where I'm trying to do it all myself, it obviously takes a lot longer. So
I know all about that.
Yeah. I know. I believe I've got every Captain Dean CD that's
you
been
do?
Released, I think.
Wow.
I think so. I may have missed a couple on the front end. But yeah, I think it was the first time we met. You guys were having a CD release actually here at Mellow Matt's.
Yeah, I had a CD release for the fourth record here.
Yeah.
So I had four at that. It was a total of seven.
Yeah.
And then there was a little EP, including the song that Ian Harper and I did together.
Yeah.
Which is on his podcast.
Yeah, the intro song.
But it's a three-song EP. It was the final Captain Dean put out.
Maybe I don't, but I thought at least
I had seven full-length records and one EP. So it's eight total.
I've got six in a T-shirt, I think.
Good for you. So, Man, thank you.
How am I doing? How am I doing?
You're a pretty good fan. I'm a terrible. I guess this is typical, right? The musician doesn't know anything.
Well, I mean.
And the fan comes forward and says, oh, my God, I've got your t-shirt.
You don't want to be that guy that's like, you know, like.
Well, it's just, it's humbling. It's fascinating, really. Yeah.
Once again, even if I didn't know you and like you and like be so happy to like sit down and talk to you or whatever, but like. Like I try to support. Like if I see like a local band I've never even heard of,
right?
If they put a $5 EP on iTunes, I'm gonna buy it.
I've noticed that about you.
You know,
I have noticed that about you.
I try not to broadcast it too much, but
well, but that's
the
thing, though. Some it's not about broadcasting it. It's the fact that you can be supportive and just drop those hints. Basically, the way I look at it is, if I find something I like local music wise,
yeah.
I feel like it's my job to help spread the word.
Yeah, for sure.
So that other people can discover it, because you never know what someone else might think or someone else might be like, man, that band's really good. I love that song. Yeah. I like that record. I've got a friend in, you know, Boston that owns this club and could put them on stage with opening for Aerosmith. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
That got way out of hand real quick. I didn't know what to come up with.
I'll bring it full circle a little bit for you. The album that we were talking about at the very beginning that you got in mind, The Regret.
Yeah.
The violin parts that are on there is my friend Sydney Elhibushi playing that. And she is actually on tour right now playing and singing backup for Carrie Underwood.
That's
I had nothing
great.
To do with her getting there at all. She's played with like Patti Loveless and some, you know, all sorts of other amazing
people.
Did
you both go to Belmont?
No, actually, we met through church out in Alvaton, just outside of
Alvaton. Oh, fascinating. She's
yeah.
from here?
She's not from
kinda
here, sorta. But then, like, I guess it was, like, end of high school. Her family moved here.
Oh, okay.
And so we all kind of knew each other from there. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, she's unbelievable. I don't feel like I need to promote for Carrie Underwood, but you know,
Carrie Underwood,
anything
American
you can
Idol.
Do to support
Season
you know
four.
Sydney, she absolutely deserves it, because I asked her to be on my you know crummy little EP and she didn't even ask any questions.
No,
she
dude,
was there.
Musicians always help each other out.
Well, there's actually probably my two favorite songs on the album are my favorite because she's playing on them. There's Sleep Forever. And then the next song it leads into is What We're Fighting For.
So you got them
on
next.
That project that are right there.
See, again, I told you I have it, and I listened to it, but that was a while back. Prior to this interview, I was like, I'm not going to just study the record and go, look at me and all the knowledge I have of all these songs. Like, I'm going to like take all this and go back and listen through it again. So.
Well, I try to kind of structure it like with a narrative flow through everything. I talked a little bit about it on the Kernel cast, but like particularly like with the if you listen, like I know it's very eclectic sonically as far as the influence and stuff I'm pulling from, but my hope is that as you listen through it, it's actually like an album that was like constructed in the order it sequenced.
Yeah, because you set out to make a concept album.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And in a way you did,
mm-hmm.
but it starts with part three.
Yeah, but it works on its own, I think. I'm a little biased, but I think it works on its own.
No, I mean, if nobody knew that, they wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome. But, that's really cool, man.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing to tell.
Yeah, but so you never know who's connected to
exactly
what they got going. And one of the things I've been getting into recently, talking about just trying to help people out locally, is like I've been lucky enough that there's been a couple people come to me and like want me to help them like from a production standpoint, which is a whole new facet for me that I'm like I've always done my own stuff. Actually, that kind of ties back into the question that I haven't answered at all about what I did, after my high school band. Right before I went to Belmont, my family's like got together and like their gift to me was that they bought me a new MacBook Pro and a Pro Tools rig.
Oh wow!
And so me and my buddy Rick spent like 3 weeks at, like. Totally taking over my parents, like half of their house, and just brought every instrument that we could get our hands on, and we recorded, and it's like, oh man, like this is a whole new thing, like and like listening back to it now, like obviously it's pretty laughable, like not so much the performances, but definitely like what I had no idea what a compressor was, and I'm just like, oh, let me throw these three presets on here and just squash it till it's.
Let me push this button and see what happens.
Exactly.
That's how I record to this day. What's this button do?
See, I thought that after being at Belmont and practicing and just doing my own stuff, I thought I'd moved beyond that a little bit.
Right.
But then, like, I'll drop a name here. David Crow. He's a kid that his dad is a killer keyboard player. Chris. I don't know if you know him. He not so much in this area, but he's from Tompkinsville, and so he's played regional bands all over the place.
Right.
He used to play with Will Hogue. singer songwriter, for example.
Yeah, I do know Will Hope.
But yeah, Chris is like unbelievable. Like I was just talking about like how good Ricky is.
Yeah.
Chris is just on that same level on the keys or whatever.
That's
but
cool.
He's been a mentor to me and always really encouraged me to kind of write and do my thing.
Good.
But his son David is wanting to kind of get started into it. So we've been working on some stuff in the studio.
So you are
producing
working
some
on
stuff
something.
For him. Yeah, and it's been really cool.
I mean,
to,
I know you're
constantly at it.
Songwriting, you're constant. I mean, it's always there. It's not like you just shut it down and take a year off or whatever.
I wish I could, but for me, it's like a compulsive kind of thing where it just like it happens. Like I was,
but it. You know, earlier you mentioned that shows just kind of come to you.
Yeah.
So you don't really go out and seek a lot of. You don't stay active in the circuit of playing out and doing shows, do you?
I play a lot of like more like acoustic, kind of like open mic night stuff because it's a little bit less of a commitment to say, oh, I'll play an hour, I'll play a half an hour, do something like that. But I was actually talking to my friend Cameron Whitman, who I don't know if you guys have had him on here, but you totally should. He's another awesome singer-songwriter and scene.
I'd have to look back.
Yeah.
He's actually, haven't, but maybe Russell or Tommy did. But
yeah, he just started hosting the open mic singer songwriter night at 4:40 on Thursday nights.
Oh, okay. Blake used to do that.
Yeah, he took over from Blake.
Okay.
But yeah, Cameron's really awesome. Blake's really awesome too. I don't know if he's going to hear this
incredible.
Or not. But
I really,
Blake's one of my favorite people.
Blake is amazing. I really hope something comes along because Black Bloods was. Fascinating.
I've been trying to get him over to my home studio, even if we don't release anything, just to make a racket because I've got everything we would need to
That's cool.
You know,
he's a good dude.
Yeah, he is. Really is. And that was just a chance meeting. Actually, I don't remember who it was, but somebody just like recommended me to Blake, talking about gigs just coming to
me.
He's like, "Hey, can you come play our songwriters night?" And then 3 years later, you know, he's one of my favorite people.
That's good. So what is going on aside from the writing, the possibility of putting out some more music
soon, right? I fully intend on it. I've got probably, if I were to like clean everything up and do the track list and all that, I probably have about 4 projects worth of stuff. But
good
there's
Lord.
one in particular that I've kind of initially started it with the thought that, oh, this is going to be like my rough like mixtape thing. I'm just going to put it together and throw it out there. And then, you know, 6 months later, I'm still working on it. but it's called American Olm or American Ogham, and it's named after like this Gaelic script that they would like carve with these lines. Like there'd be like a horizontal or a vertical line, and they'd do the hash marks or diagonal lines or whatever. But there's some people that have found markings in like West Virginia that they think indicate there was like somehow Celtic people made it over here before the Vikings
or
something like that.
There's stuff like that all over this country.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily know if I think that, oh, that's absolutely true. I just thought the idea of it was cool, and so that's kind of like the idea for the project.
I'm trying to think what the name of that place is in New Mexico that it's like they can't even explain it. They're like, I don't know.
Well, it's did you see
thousands of years ago?
It was like middle of last year they released it, and they found it like a couple of years ago. But it had to like get through all the proper channels. Like they found like a mammoth bone that's like 100,000 years old in North America that has like hack marks on it, like a knife or something. So it's like there's no natural way that it could have gotten hacked up like that. So it's like pushing all these timelines. Like I don't know. I don't want to get started on that because then we'll be here for a couple more hours talking about it. But
yeah.
I think it's all pretty fascinating. Maybe we can do that off mic. I don't know if anybody else wants to listen to that.
I lean more towards the thing most people don't speak of.
Yeah.
I'm into all of it, really, actually. Yeah. I dig it. I heard you and Ian talking about the flat earth shit. No, I'm not doing it.
Hey, well, once again, I think it's hollow. It's round, but it's hollow.
Round and hollow. Like a beach ball.
There you go.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I fully intend on releasing some new music soon.
Well, what are you going to do about... Did you say that your friend was like pestering you to put a band together or do something?
Well, he and I were talking about...
people that you jam with, but you have
somehow,
no intent...
Somehow Cameron is always playing everywhere all the time, and so he and I were just talking about it. And I guess it ultimately comes down to just... him getting out there and just talking to people and kind of that asking the worst they can do is say no. And
it's
for me it's if I don't want them to say no, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
Just being a little shy about it.
I mean, I feel like you've got something that needs to be heard.
Well,
And you can only get so much on...
Captain is at an order.
Yeah, that's a command. I just feel like there's enough openings in this area,
yeah,
that you can do that kind of stuff. But yeah, you could also, I see you being able to do like opening segments or opening up for bands. Like, yeah, if it's just you,
yeah,
I feel like you got what it takes to do a 30-minute set opening for a full band if you don't have a band or yeah, want to have a full band.
Well, I mean, I guess my thing is I need to get out of my bat cave and start being plugged into the scene a little bit more and do it, because I would love to do that kind of stuff. It's been a little difficult because you and I were talking when we were scheduling this. Yeah. I've got a toddler at home.
You're a father.
Yeah, doing the dad thing. So.
Well, and so my daughter was born, I was still really active. Like,
oh, really?
I didn't really slow down very long, but I mean, I did take somewhat of a break.
Yeah.
I didn't play every weekend, but yeah, I still found a way to make it work.
Yeah.
So I can assure you there's ways to balance.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
make it work. So,
well, I would love to do it. And you know what? If I've got a direct order, I don't want to be insubordinate. So I guess I need to make it happen. I would love to do it. I would love to get out there and play some more. And I guess
think you should, because yeah, you're super good. You're talented.
Well,
I mean,
thanks, man. You're gonna make me blush. I don't know if they can hear that on the podcast. Well, you know.
But you've got good stuff, and to be working on new material, mm-hmm, needs to be heard.
Well, it's almost there. It's almost there. I've got almost sent it to you on my mailing list. That I have, I sent them a three track preview.
Okay.
Where it's at least done enough that I'm like, all right, here you go. What they don't know is that's like the softer stuff that I got done first, and mm-hmm, now I'm working on the stuff with the wah-wah pedal and the electric guitar and all
that's
that.
That's great. That's really cool. Anybody listening to this, where can they find most of your work at?
The stuff that's released is on, it's on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, if you want to actually, give me more than, 0.12 cents or whatever for
per
stream or whatever. That's my standing line on Spotify. Go ahead and listen on Spotify, just if you don't mind, like, leave it playing, like, after you, like, you go to do something else so we can get the repeat revenue.
There you go.
But, yeah, it's all on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music. It should be on YouTube. And if you look on my social media pages, you'll hear all sorts of clips of stuff I'm working on. So I like.
Obviously, you have a Facebook page and Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram's Cash to Cash. Facebook is Cash Wilson Music. Twitter, which I don't really use, and I actually have recently gone back and deleted,
I got rid of Twitter years ago. Yeah. No, I didn't get it. I was too old at that point. But what are these damn kids messing with this Twitter thing?
I mean, I get the idea of, like, brevity being the soul of wit and all that kind of stuff, but like keeping it simple. But for me, I feel like Instagram is a lot better as far as using the hashtags to find something that you're interested in and being able to immediately open up this portal into something else.
That's true. And I love the beginnings of Instagram, where it's just a photograph.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're like, well, you can tack on some words if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like, my band's playing at Tin Balls Friday. Come see us.
Yeah.
Here's the flyer.
I try to find,
Everything turns into MySpace.
Yeah. Well, really, that's true. Do you see that on Facebook you can add music to your profile now?
I guess I'm so old I don't even know that.
I saw somebody
you
say that.
You damn kids and your MTV on Facebook.
There you go. But yeah. I don't know. It's weird because I was around for all the MySpace stuff and put all it. It's one of those things. I'm kind of gun shy of any social media network that rises
because
up
you
now.
You think it's going to be not cool?
Because we put the work into our MySpace page and like you see, I mean, it did get me here on the Sound Atlas, but
yeah,
beyond that hasn't done
well,
much.
Well,
yeah,
it was on your resume, so I was like, well, that fits.
Yeah, had 48,000 MySpace friends.
Yeah, he's good enough. Well, one thing I like to wrap up with, is there anything I missed Is there anything I forgot to ask
you?
To
be honest, I've done such a bad job of trying to keep this in any sort of chronological order, I don't even know.
What kind of guitar strings do you use?
Are we talking acoustic or electric?
Doesn't matter, both.
All right, Diodario Electrics, 11s, the jazz set that they've got.
Okay.
And then, except for, I do have, last year for my birthday, I got a Squire Strat, this is $100 that I was going to swap the pickups out on it.
Best guitars in the world, and, $100.
I absolutely agree. My plan was initially to try and do like a knockoff, like Rye Cooter caster.
Oh, okay.
And I have not gotten around to doing that, but I did set it up with the flat wounds and raise the action and all that. So I use that for sliding stuff. I don't remember what brand the flat wounds were, because those are a little bit harder to come by than
some brand.
Yeah, I'm going to say those were probably Diodario too.
Yeah, maybe if I was endorsed, I would talk more about
it. Yeah, there you go. Well, speaking of endorsements, on my acoustic, I've got a Martin HD28 that is like my dream guitar that like every time I pick it up and play it, I'm like, okay, where do I need to hang this back up on the wall and go home? But my wife actually made that happen for me a few years ago. It was like you know those gifts that you get? It's like a combination birthday, Father's Day, Christmas for like the rest of
your life.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm going to give you this guitar and don't ever ask me for anything else.
Which that was the deal, because I felt so bad about spending that much money on myself for something. But then at the same time, like I
said, you're worth it.
Well,
maybe it's Maybelline.
But then she got me, like 2 months later for Christmas, she got me a LR Bags DI box that I like was like exactly the spec I wanted and all that. She had some of my friends be kind of sneaky and be like, so I'm looking at getting this such and such. What are you looking to get? Which was awesome. But yeah.
That's good.
So on that, I just use Martin lights. You don't want to go too heavy with them and you know, start arching the top up or anything if it gets too dry.
That's cool.
So
that's really cool.
Yeah, we ought to get together and make a racket sometime. You know, I know you're
saying. I know how to make a racket.
Yeah,
I'm a great studio drummer. That's what most people would call upon me for.
Yeah, well, you can do that because
I can play wagon.
I'm using that Apple loops or my fingers right now. So,
yeah, dude, you're always welcome to come to my house. I can set up my drums in 10 minutes and cut some drum tracks for you.
I may have to take.
I will be your. I am. Well, they call me Captain Dean, the drum machine, for a reason.
That's
I'm like Ringo Starr.
Military.
Perfect timing. I can play drums and cough and scream and yell while I'm in the process.
You know, sometimes those are the best things, though, because, like, especially since I've gotten more into the production side of it. Like, my buddy Asher Austin, he's a singer-songwriter out in Nashville.
Yeah.
That one day I will get him to release his. We have written this album for him and
why
got most
people
of it
making
recorded.
Records and not putting them out.
I don't know. He's a weird dude that, like, you know how I said at the beginning, I like to cultivate an air of mystery.
Yeah.
He takes this to like the nth degree. It's like you'll be like sitting there texting him about something and then all of a sudden the conversation is just gonna die and you won't hear from him for like 6 months. Wow. And then all of a sudden he shows up and everybody's always so happy to see him because he's such a nice guy.
Weird.
But anyway, he's got this album Crumble that I've written a couple songs by myself that then I let him like have for it, and then we've written a bunch of stuff together, and it's like a greatest hits album, but it's just the one CD, and it's just like it covers like all this different territory and stuff, and it's some of my favorite stuff to listen to, but everybody thinks I'm crazy when I talk about it because nobody else can hear it yet because it's not been released.
I get that. That's pretty neat.
But yeah, man.
Oh, I know one thing I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah.
In your interview with Ian, you mentioned Joseph Campbell.
Oh, yes.
Do you study Joseph Campbell?
I don't know if I would. I watch a lot of YouTube videos.
Okay.
Read some
That's
stuff
study.
Every once in a while. Yeah.
That's audio visual.
There you go.
Study guides.
Yeah. No, I haven't read everything he's written, but like you know, like
but
the basic stuff, like the hero with a thousand faces.
The connection of how all of these things throughout human history are kind of like they mirror each other.
See that's actually when I started to write this American Ulm or Ogham. I'm not gonna.
Are you confused on the word?
Well, you can pronounce it either way. on one of the songs that
depends
mentions it,
on
I
what
say,
part of the country
I say Ulm. I say Ulm. But so on American Ulm, that was initially my concept, is I wanted to write these songs that were like, had this mythological component to them at one level.
Okay.
But then were also just like, kind of like folky pop songs on another level.
That's awesome.
And I don't know how well it's happened. But like there's a song, When Giants Sleep, that I really love on it, that I think is going to be the first track on the album. that's talking about, like, there's, like, an old, like, in Scotland and Ireland, they have these things, that, like, all these megalithic structures.
Oh, yeah.
And they talk about how, like, some of them, they mark where the giants are buried. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, the one day they're going to wake up, you know. And so, like, then you take that and you talk
they're
about,
they're
going to
want a beer.
Yeah. But you take that and you talk about, like, you know, in not even necessarily, like, a romantic relationship. Like,
right.
you can write about that. But I think that sometimes it's a little bit more powerful if you can make it so it's any interpersonal relationship that you're talking about.
I like it.
Talk about how there's things that below the surface there that you have no idea
right.
of what's going on in this other person's mind, or what baggage you're carrying around with them, or what's, you know, all this stuff. So you never know. By and large, you think everything's okay, but every once in a while, there's going to be some weird spot you're going to step, and there's a landmine that you have no idea.
That's crazy.
And so try to write a song about that, you know? Just think before you speak. There's shaky ground beneath our feet, built up in haste and incomplete.
See?
So baby, tread lightly now.
Look how fucking brilliant you are. You're smart. Anybody that studies Joseph Campbell is pretty damn smart. Hi, Mellow Matt.
Hey.
What are you doing? Oh, this is how you all film. They're filming their...
Oh,
they're not doing anything.
Yeah, we don't want to give away trade secrets.
Sorry.
Matt, get away from me.
But yeah, Joseph Campbell's awesome.
Yes.
I love Star Wars that was inspired by Joseph
I was
Campbell.
Getting, that was where I was going with this whole
thing.
Keep
going, don't let me stop you.
Because I understand how George Lucas was like Joseph Campbell's best student
mm-hmm.
at UC. Is it UCA? What is that called? University of California?
Yeah.
USC.
Yeah, there you go.
He took classes like
yeah.
So Joseph Campbell was there in the early drafts of the Star Wars script
mm-hmm.
and he helped steer George Lucas on the right.
I didn't really I knew later on they got to be friends, but I thought
George Lucas
he had just read his books or
Joseph Campbell told someone that George Lucas was his best student.
I thought that was just figurative. That's really cool to find out he was actually his student. I know.
That's real shit. No, that's real.
Well, I mean, you look at the application of it, and like, I mean,
it's the whole thing again. It's about how connections throughout human history are, no matter where you are in the world, it's like the story's the same.
Yep.
The outcome is the same.
Yep.
The rebirth is the same. It's like it just literally has that amazing, you know,
and
pathway of whatever.
I've never thought about it like in these terms exactly before you just said that right now, but like I think that's ultimately like when I talk about like pulling from a wide range of musical influences,
mm-hmm.
I think that's ultimately what I'm trying to do in my own little way with my music.
Right. Well, you see, know. I watch Star Wars from many perspectives as a fan, not of sci-fi, but just mm-hmm. of what it is.
Yeah.
The story.
Yep.
But I learned how to make records at home by watching behind-the-scenes
mm-hmm.
documentaries of how George Lucas made movies.
Oh, really?
I make records like a movie director films a movie.
Huh.
I look at it as segments and pieces.
Yeah.
Let me capture this thing.
Yeah.
And then I can edit, move, clip, shave, enhance. Like, you can...
Yeah.
You just got to capture what you need. So it's just like filming a scene. I can get the shot of what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
And then I can merge it into this and that. So I'm not great with video.
Mm-hmm.
I can do videos on my wonderful iPhone.
Yeah.
Just the very iPhone I'm recording this podcast onto. But
it's
a
phone of many
talents. iPhone is great. Thanks, Steve Jobs, and all the aliens that gave him the idea for that. But that's a true story.
Yeah.
When I started making my own records, I was like blown away at watching all these like Star Wars documentaries, and he talked about not only the Joseph Campbell knowledge that he got from mythology and storytelling, but then he had this great vision that nobody could understand. That he went to school with, you know, Steven Spielberg and Francis Ford Coppola, they all thought he was nuts. They were like, man, can you make just a normal movie instead of he makes THX 1138? And when you watch that, it's like THX 1138 as a movie
mm-hmm.
is like listening to a Beck album.
Yeah.
So Do you see where I'm going with that? Absolutely. That's how my brain comprehends music.
See, I've never even thought about it. I've just started to approach like my process, mm-hmm. like kind of like that, but I never thought about it that clearly.
It's hard for me to explain, but I can get deep on it. I don't know.
Somehow. Well, like you
if
think
I can
about
talk to the right person, it makes sense.
Well, you're talking about capturing what you need to.
Yeah.
Like there's a technique like called vocal comping, which for those that don't know what you do, and this is like how every Britney Spears album has ever been made.
Oh, please tell me.
Is they'll sit there and they'll record multiple takes of
yes,
every single
that
thing.
I know.
And then they will go through syllable by syllable, yeah, sometimes even breath by breath.
That's
and
the Mutt Lange
the
approach
sound
to recording drums, which is
yeah,
fucking weird for me to think about how you can just hit the snare drum.
Yeah.
And that's not capturing a live, raw performance of a yeah, full drum kit being yeah, performed. But that's how he did it.
See,
and he did it on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day where there was no way to splice and
see, that,
instant
that's what blows
editing
my mind, is
yeah,
the fact they were
crazy
able to do that back then. And I've got a little bit of a different perspective on that because, like, I'm not a drummer. Like that's one of the things that, like, and as I've been working on this stuff, like I've been trying to come to understand better and study different patterns,
right,
and like been learning all the like the Pat Boom, Pat Debbie, or whatever. Like learn like how you like kind
of
talk through some
fish
of the rhythms and
yeah,
that
there's
kind of
there's
stuff
a lot of to me it's a language of its own,
mm-hmm,
but there's three levels to it in my opinion.
Yeah, what are they?
Slow,
mm-hmm,
mid tempo, and fast.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah.
And you just kind of hover somewhere in that world between the metronome settings.
Yeah.
You find a comfort zone,
mm-hmm,
to set the song to for the sake of comfort. This is how I want the rhythm of the guitar to be strummed. This is how I want the vocal medley to flow.
Yeah.
So you find the right rhythm to fit something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how I look at it.
See, and this is going to sound blasphemous, I'm sure, to you, like the way that I go about doing it, because I'm not a drummer, is like...
Well, I'm not very...
I'll actually sit there, and I've got, in Ableton Live, I have 100, probably 200 different drum kits, where I've got different samples for different kind of stuff.
That's
wild. I'll sit there, and I'll alternate different stuff, and I'll do the MIDI, and sometimes I'll play it out, you know, on my keyboard or whatever.
I don't know how that works.
Sometimes I'll sit there, and I actually picked this up from, I didn't even watch the full master class, but Timbaland had a master class about like how he constructs a beat or whatever.
Okay.
And I never even crossed my mind to do this. He actually sits there and beatboxes the drums that he hears in his head into the microphone, and then when he does like a poof, like that's a kick drum.
Right.
And then so he's got like different sounds that like when he does it, oh, this is that, and he'll go back and like fill it in that way. And so he's got like the original version of a lot
makes,
of his stuff.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. So I'll try and do
like,
that.
Like to me, that's
too
no different than the singer
yeah,
of a band doesn't know how to play an instrument to save their life, but
mm-hmm,
they're a brilliant singer.
Yeah.
And they can come in and go, I got this thing where it's like, and the guitar player can immediately just just nail it.
I know you got to be careful bringing him up these days, and I'm not going to comment.
Oh way, God!
But you know where I'm going, right?
No.
Well, like Michael Jackson, like the original like,
oh, okay,
Beat It demo,
God,
where
you
he's
scared
got
me. I thought you were going to talk about somebody locally.
Oh,
locally.
No. I don't have enough street cred to start that kind of beef anyway. Even if I wanted to,
it's Michael Jackson.
Well, I know, but. Anyway, but
no, I talked about Michael Jackson recently in one of these episodes.
Yeah.
Was like, I wanted that jacket, damn it. I was in the first grade when Thriller came out. I was like, they had him at JCPenney
yeah,
at the mall. And I was like, I want that jacket.
You,
I didn't
have
get
you
it.
Ever gotten it.
I got the glove. I didn't get the jacket.
There was one time my wife and I were on a trip with our church in Costa Rica, and one of the ministers there was talking about some movie, and he just could not believe that we had not seen this obscure movie he was talking
the
about.
The Wiz?
No.
Oh.
That had nothing to do with
no
Michael Jackson.
Or...
But then a couple days later, he was talking about something, and he said, now, what was the name of that singer? He was quite popular a few years ago that we used to wear the glove on the one hand.
Oh, Lord.
And that's who he was talking about. It was just kind of like a whole different world talking to him. He's a really nice guy, though.
Just out of touch with
but
reality.
I guess so, yeah. Which, you know, it's kind of admirable, I think. To
no,
it's,
extent,
you know,
yeah,
being able to just go do your own thing, be unplugged.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that.
But anyway, what I was starting to say is that you can actually find some of the demos. I know particularly for some of the songs on Thriller, where it's the demo of him layering on like a tape machine, every single part, singing it.
Yeah.
And it's so crazy to listen to that.
Yeah.
And it's all like,
you and again, like, he record. Could do it. Prince could do it.
Yeah.
Prince was a master Jedi level nine, you know, guy of musicianship. I mean, it's just impressive. What killed me about Prince is that the moments I'd see him on TV where he would just have the microphone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, this guy could play every instrument on stage. Yep. And he comes out there with just a microphone. I'm like, that's interesting.
Can you imagine if Prince were to like coming up in this day and age when everybody does like their videos of them like looping, like, okay, I'm going to go lay down the drums here, then I'm going to go play the bass.
I mean, that's hard to imagine because it is weird to think about the fact that he influenced like Bruno Mars. And Bruno Mars is super talented.
Yeah.
He can play drums. He can play, I'm sure, keyboard and guitar and all that other stuff too.
Yeah.
But again, he just technically comes out with a microphone.
Yeah.
I don't understand the multi-level of super talent that can go in a studio and play everything and do everything and control the record.
Yeah.
But then on stage, they're just like, I just want a mic.
Yeah.
I just want a mic so I can dance.
And maybe that's part of it. Because, I mean, for some people, that's as much a part. The dancing is as much a part of it as the instrument. I can't do. There's a very good reason I'm always hidden behind a guitar.
We are extraordinarily white. People, we cannot do such things.
That's probably, if you need to put a description in the episode, say two very white guys sit down to discuss.
The racism card on ourselves here.
I will say in this case, white people. In this case, there's a reason for some stereotypes.
I can't
dance. Like
I can lay down some thick ass fat drum beats, and but
we need that.
I can't
just
dance
to
them. Yep. I can dance like Elaine from Seinfeld. That's about as good as it gets. Have we gotten off topic yet?
Maybe once or twice.
Great.
Yeah.
Then it's going great. Okay, I think we've totally covered everything.
Probably. I hope we haven't run over our allotted time.
Are they playing us off yet?
Are they playing us off?
No.
I'd like to thank my mom and God and all the fans.
My last question for you, sir, will be the grand question that I ask everybody. As a local musician, fan, on and off stage, who are you a fan of, and what inspires you in this music scene?
All right, this is going to be very difficult because
yes, it is.
We're
going
to double.
Ask the hard.
I don't
question.
Have to pick just one, right? I can name everybody,
past or present.
Okay,
anything you want. Just
I will say right now,
locally
obviously,
speaking,
obviously the Josephines are killing it.
Yes,
getting out there.
Everybody says
up.
That exact same phrase too. The Josephines are killing it.
Yep.
How about the Josephines are the bomb, or the Josephines are awesome?
They're thebomb.com. How about
everybody
that?
Literally says, oh, man, the Josephines are killing it.
Josephines.
Why is that the first thing to go to? That's funny. I'm just kidding. No, you don't know that. Literally everybody I interview, that's what they say.
But, I mean, killing it, man.
Josephines killing it. And you know what? They won't do this.
Oh, really? Have you asked them?
I've asked Zach like 100 times. Really? Haven't I, Zach?
Now,
you're probably not even listening to this while you're on the tour of Vanna White.
Zach may not have time to go through his whole history here in the scene.
If I could get Zach and his father, Tony,
sit down and do one of these,
I'd be thrilled to death.
Like that's it, right?
Yeah, I'd be like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Drop the mic.
Well, I went to high school with Brad, so I know him through that, and then I've kind of met Zach just... You know, I don't know Zach very well.
Zach was already famous by the time you would have met him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
They were really
popular.
Like, you know, shit was blown up for him.
Yeah,
at a young age,
for sure. I remember high school. Everybody, I forget. It was my Super Sweet 16. They were on one episode.
Were they?
I remember. Like everybody talking about how they had to get home and set their, you know,
Matt, do you know
TiVo or whatever.
Was the secret on? A TV show or something?
Yeah. It was. I think it was my Super Sweet 16, I think.
Geez, Zach Lindsay, it should be cool if you'd sit down and tell this story to all the sound atlas.
He's here, too, at this store. He's playing here, too.
I know that. I was here. I was standing about right where you are and watched them perform. By the way, while we were talking earlier, Greg Martin was in here.
Yeah, I saw him.
And I didn't want to... I got starstruck for a minute.
Understandable.
I didn't want to ask him to come over and talk about how awesome he is.
I've been taking him a while to talk about it, if he's going to talk about it.
It's like, can I borrow your Grammy as a paperweight next time I have some outdoor work to do
I
with
paper? I actually don't know Mr. Greg, but everything I have seen and heard about him, he seems like he's a pretty
he's
humble
fantastic.
Guy. So
he's
I don't
a great
know.
Dude.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to bother him.
Yeah.
He probably didn't want to bother us. He's like, man, they're busy. I'm not going to intrude.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Josephines obviously
I would say the Josephines. Killer. And then also, I'll give a shout out to some of the people I'm rubbing elbows with all the time at the open mic night scene and doing that. So Cameron Whitman, who I've already talked about.
Yeah.
Cameron's awesome. Sarah Van Meter also plays out there a lot. Colonel Ian, who we've talked about.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing his own thing.
Is he doing open mic stuff or is he
I think he's playing this Thursday night actually.
At 4:40?
At 4:40.
Okay.
Yeah, let's say I don't know what the wait time is on releasing this, so that would be October the 3rd?
It doesn't matter.
I believe. If anybody wants to go.
Oh, dude, by the time this airs, it'll be almost Christmas time.
It'll be too late. You'll just be trying to find your
When people are listening to this, they'll be out Christmas shopping going, I'm going to go to the mall and shop, and I'm going to go listen to the Sound Atlas to tune out all the Christmas music.
Well, hopefully by then I'll actually finish my project up.
Maybe you should. Just in time for the holidays.
There you go. Yeah. Special Christmas bundles of all sorts of merchandise.
That's right. I got it out just in time for 2019.
But then, let's see. Last name I'll throw out there is I'll also say Jordan Young is also doing a great job. He's from Mona, but I think he's doing his own thing now.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, Mona doesn't exist anymore, do they?
I'm not sure what the official status is. So
Matt?
I don't want to say one way or
is
another.
Is Mona still a band? Ask the good questions that
that's
nobody can answer. Anything else out there stand out to you on the fan note?
I'm trying to think because, I mean, obviously you've had all sorts of amazing people here on the podcast.
Well, let's
put
somebody's got to do it.
Everybody go back through the archives and listen to every artist.
Yeah, no shit.
Been
There's a lot. There's a lot.
You know, that's something that I think you and I had briefly discussed over Facebook at one point, because I've got like my I paid like DistroKid or whatever to do like a certain level of the distribution for like me and my buddies that release different stuff.
Right.
And one of the things I thought would be really awesome is if somebody can make it their mission to do kind of what you're doing with like the stories of everybody.
Right.
But make sure that like whatever projects people are putting out here is like available out there for people to hear.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and for posterity. And I don't know. So hopefully somebody will do that at some point. But
there's a lot of things that are done in this music scene that is amazing to me.
Yeah.
That we're so lucky to have it.
For sure. For sure.
I mean, we're the goofballs that get to participate in all this stuff. You know?
And I'm going to try and keep participating more.
Peace, Mellow Matt. You know, it's Monday, so it's technically Metal Matt Monday. You should be playing some Megadeth or Motorhead. Metal Church. What other? Yeah? Ride the Mellow. Cliff Burton's birthday was, I guess it was a couple of days ago. Man.
I went through a brief phase in high school where I got into Amon Amarth. It's a Viking metal band.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Check out their song In Pursuit of Vikings was my favorite just because you could turn it on and just watch people's faces just like, and I don't know if it's because of the kind of music I usually play and listen
to.
Or
look
up I just sit there and click play on it and watch like their hands go over their ears and then their faces just have this look of horror come over.
It's what now? Viking metal? Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah. I just opened up a whole new can of worms.
I've never heard of that term before.
It's pretty good stuff. Yeah, we'll have to regroup on it. And,
okay.
And see what you
I know
did.
What I'll be doing at 10 o'clock at night in bed searching for YouTube videos.
Maybe want to get started a little bit earlier. I don't know. People are different, but definitely not the kind of thing that would suit me to sleep.
Well, you know, you can turn the volume down.
Yeah.
Well, Cash, is there anything I forgot? I think we got
think
everything
we
but
covered,
the kitchen sink here.
Yeah, everything. Like, literally closer than I thought we ever could have possibly gotten to covering everything in, an hour and a half?
Yeah, you're almost at an hour 22 at this point.
Oh, there you go.
You did great.
We won't drag it out.
No, people love this. That's what they tune in for. They love this shit.
Yeah.
They like hearing the random goofiness and stuff.
This has been an honor, and then I will try and be getting out there and hopefully find some.
Get out there and get. I mean, now that you've done the Kernel Cast, you've done the Sound Atlas, you're working on some music.
Yeah,
just go get that music out and start playing out some more.
That'll be the thing to do.
I'm hoping that we'll do a show together at some point.
Oh, for sure.
I'm all for that. Teaming up, because I swear some of the best shows I've ever gone to or been a part of are the ones where the bands have very little in common.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I think from a fan perspective, I think people like that.
Yeah.
Club owners don't seem to agree with that.
Yeah.
They think you have to have three rock bands and three hip-hop artists and three country bands.
Yeah.
I think you can have a metal band and a hip-hop artist and a jazz quartet. And it would be one of the coolest shows ever.
I absolutely agree with
the variety aspect of it. I think is pretty cool.
I mean, for sure. I think that's kind of like you and I were talking earlier about just like the different varieties of music we listen to. Like,
yeah,
people are it's especially now. Like, it's so easy to get music.
It is.
You can stream it if you want to be lame, or you can come here to Mellow Mats and load up.
Hey, man.
But you can get your hands on so many different kinds of music. There's no reason that you've got to like maintain like an image or something.
I get my hands on all the records
here
at Mellow
Mats. The Linda Ronstadt.
I'm picking up Linda Ronstadt and the Nelson Riddle Orchestra. What's new for 99 cents? That's like a download. You get a whole record.
The whole record. Here you go. You got.
This album came out in 1983 on the Elektra Asylum record label, and let's see what's on here. I don't see any hits. I don't want it.
Well, if you're looking for the hits, I've got it right here.
Look at you.
Steppenwolf Gold, their greatest hits. First two songs.
Which is exactly what it says.
Born to be Wild and Magic Carpet Ride. I got to be honest, I don't know.
For 99 cents.
There you go.
It's like a buy one, get one free download. Mellow Mass Music and More, where you can get Steppenwolf and Linda Ronstadt.
Right next to each other.
Yep. Right next to us. Where we are sitting. Yeah, exactly. Well, again, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sharing your story and being a goofball with me.
I'm glad to do it, man. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Please get out, and if you're listening to this, check out Cash Wilson or Cash the Cash Wilson on all the social media platforms. Check out his music. Give it a listen. Give it a like. And tell everybody you know that Cash Wilson is awesome because Captain Dean gave you an order to.
Aye, aye, Captain.